Hello and welcome to Armchair Detectives Wanted. This is our Unsolved Case Week. Episode 22, A Broken Down Vehicle. A case from the USA. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Before we start, I will just issue a warning. This podcast may include content that some could find upsetting. It may also contain offensive language. As with all these cases, they are real life events. So please be aware that the crimes have had an impact on the family and friends of the victim. This is the case of Tammy Jo Zawicki. Her body was located on the 1st of September 1992. She was found by a trucker on a rural area of Interstate 44 in Lawrence County. This is in the southwest of Missouri, between Springfield and Joplin. Tammy was located near the small town of Secosa. The town has a population of about 1,500. It was an area known for strawberry production. In fact, the town is named after the chief of the Delaware Indians. On either side of the interstate there is a dense woodland and large areas of grassland. Tammy's body was found wrapped in a red blanket. This had been manufactured by the Kenworth Truck Company. The blanket had been sealed with duct tape. She had 7 stab wounds to the chest. The medical examiner, who completed the autopsy, noted the wounds were clustered in a circle around her heart. It was deemed a small sharp object had been used to cause the injuries. The stab wounds were catastrophic, and she died of internal bleeding. There was also evidence she had been sexually assaulted. This was indeed a grim discovery, and one the family feared. She was born in Pennsylvania, in Pleasant Hill, on the 13th of March 1971. At the time of her death, Tammy was just 21 years of age. She was the only female sibling of 4 children. Tammy had 2 older brothers and 1 who was younger. Her parents had moved to Malton, New Jersey, which is where she lived when not at college. She was described as an upbeat and athletic. She had a keen interest in playing soccer and photography. Tammy had a summer job working at a local video rental store. In August 1992, Tammy was due to start her senior year at Grinnell College in Iowa. She was studying art history and Spanish. In fact, she had only recently returned from Madrid. On the morning of August 21st, 1992, Tammy and her sibling Darren left home to attend their respective colleges. Tammy and Darren travelled in her 1985 white Pontiac. Her brother was studying at Northwestern University. It was her intention to drop him off and stay with a friend she had overnight. The following morning, she would then make her way to Grinnell. Tammy wasn't actually due to start at college until the 8th of September. However, she decided to attend early so she could participate in her passion of photography. She was to take photos of the college athletes for the yearbook. On August 21st, Tammy and Darren stayed overnight in Pittsburgh. Their parents were there visiting family. The following day, Tammy and Darren continued on their journey. It was anticipated that Tammy would contact her parents on reaching Grinnell. While travelling, they had to stop the car at least twice as the engine kept stalling. They replenished the oil and water in the vehicle and made it to Northwestern. She dropped off her brother and then stayed the night with her friend. On the afternoon of the 23rd, Tammy started her journey to Grinnell. Her brother had checked the vehicle and told her to stop in a rest area if the dashboard illuminated any warning signs. Between 3 p.m. and 4 p.m, a witness reported seeing Tammy pulled over on Interstate 80 near mile marker 83. This is the exit for Utica. The witness stated that the bonnet of the car was up and she appeared to be looking at the engine. It is known that at least 26 vehicles stopped to offer assistance. One particular vehicle seen near to Tammy raised concern with the police. This was a truck. It was white in colour with stripes diagonal across the centre of the vehicle. The stripes were a browny orange rust colour which were faded in the middle. It was displaying a company name or logo. To see an image of the vehicle, please visit www.armchairdetectiveswanted.com. On August the 23rd, her parents, Joan and Hank, became concerned when Tammy had failed to contact them. When they didn't hear from her, they assumed she had just got caught up spending time with friends. On the 24th of August, a truck driver named Robert Bullington stated he witnessed Tammy get into the cab of another trucker. He had met that trucker earlier in the day. He knew this person by the name Jerry, as they had met at a truck stop. As Robert and Jerry continued on their journeys, they remained in contact via CB radio. Both Jerry and Robert saw Tammy at the side of the road. Robert stated, "Jerry stopped and I told him that Tammy was okay." Robert continued on his journey. It wasn't until the posters appeared that Robert realised the female was in fact Tammy. Unfortunately, Robert knew very little about Jerry, other than he had a Nebraska license plate on his truck. The time that Robert gives for this interaction is 1 a.m. This is much later than other witnesses placed Tammy at the side of her vehicle. On the morning of the 24th, Tammy's parents contacted her friends and the school. Her friends confirmed they had not seen or heard from her. The school stated she had not arrived. The family made contact with Illinois and Iowa police. Initially, the police were dismissive, stating she may have been with friends or a boyfriend. At that time, Tammy was not in a relationship. It appears Tammy's vehicle had been ticketed the day before by a state trooper, believing it was abandoned. Then, the following day, it was towed away by the police. On hearing this, and realising their daughter was absent from the vehicle, they filed a missing persons report. Joan and Hank flew to Chicago to be closer to the investigation. Initially, her parents found the police to be unhelpful. The police stated there was no evidence of foul play, and she would probably return. Her parents obviously hoped this would be the case. The family then started to use the media to notify the public of their missing daughter. On the 25th of August, students from both Grinnell College and Northwest University began a search for her. They also circulated missing persons flyers. It wasn't until 3 days after the disappearance of Tammy that the police began searching. Her car was at the police station. It didn't show any signs of a struggle. As the vehicle had been touched by a number of people during its recovery, the police decided not to fingerprint the vehicle. Her luggage were there, but there were items missing. As the investigation progressed, it became apparent that she had been seen by more than 60 witnesses while at the side of Interstate 80. At least 26 of those were drivers who had stopped to help. On the 1st of September, a truck driver makes the gruesome discovery of Tammy's body. He immediately attends the police station and returns with officers to show them her location. He did provide two different stories of why he stopped. One was that he needed to urinate. The other was that it was going to rain, so he stopped to pull the tarpaulin over the tools in the rear of his vehicle. At the time of her discovery, Tammy was wearing some of the clothes she had last been seen in. This included a blue t-shirt with the East Side Soccer logo on it. This is the name of her high school. The pathologist estimated that she had been dead 4 to 7 days prior to her discovery. Tammy was officially identified by her dental records. It is noted that the following items were missing: her 35mm camera, a Loris brand watch which had a green strap. The watch face had a green umbrella on it. It also played a musical tune, "Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head." Her purse and wallet were also missing. Please go to www.armchairdetectiveswanted.com to see a photo of the watch. Tammy was also wearing lacy underwear and a pink bra with the word "love." Her family stated this did not fit with her tomboy lifestyle and don't believe they are her clothes. As the police investigation got into full swing, a number of witnesses came forward. Two women, one from Wisconsin and the other from Illinois, stated they had a male try to pull them over while pretending to be a police officer. This line of inquiry, though, did not progress the investigation into Tammy's death. A reward of $100,000 was issued for information, but again, this did not lead to the identification of a suspect. However, in 1994, a strong suspect was identified. A nurse who resides in Springfield, Missouri, had seen Tammy on the day she disappeared. The nurse drove past Tammy on Interstate 80. She witnessed a male standing with her. She later recognised the male as Lonnie Beardropped, a trucker that had previously attended her clinic. The wife of Beardropped showed the nurse a watch she had been given by her husband. The watch played a musical tune. He lived in Missouri, close to where the body was found. He knew the area very well. At the time of her disappearance, he worked for Kenworth Truck Company, the very place where the red blanket was from, the blanket that covered Tammy's body. He also sold his car not long after the murder. Police did obtain a DNA sample from him and recovered his vehicle. However, they were unable to link him to the crime. In 2002, Beardropped died. A former police officer who had worked on the case but retired stated that Beardropped had never been ruled out of the investigation. This was due to the fact a full DNA for comparison was not possible. Another suspect identified in 2007 is Bruce Mendenhall. He was a long-distance trucker who preyed on females, mainly drug addicts and sex workers. Police believe he may be linked to at least 11 offences. He was arrested for the murder of Sarah Hulbert. The white truck we spoke about earlier has yet to be identified. The driver was described as a white male, just above 6 feet tall, with dark bushy hair, aged about 35 to 40. A $50,000 reward still remains available for information leading to the arrest and conviction of a person for the murder of Tammy. So now, it's over to you, the Armchair Detectives Wanted team. This is what we know. On the 23rd of August 1992, Tammy is on Interstate 80 near the exit for Utica. This is near mile marker 83. She is last seen between 3 p.m. and 4 p.m. that day. Her car had broken down and she had the bonnet lifted and she was alone. Over 60 people remember seeing her at the side of the road. Incredibly, 26 witnesses stopped to offer her assistance. A witness states they saw her get into a truck belonging to a male he knew as Jerry at 1 a.m. on the 24th. This sighting does appear to contradict other witnesses. She was then located over 500 miles away in rural land just off the Interstate 44 near the small town of Secosa. She had been wrapped in a red Kenworth Truck Company blanket. The blanket had been sealed with duct tape. She had been sexually assaulted. She had been stabbed 7 times in the chest around her heart. She had personal items missing. She was potentially wearing underwear that didn't belong to her. And here's what we need to know. Where was Tammy between her last sighting on the 23rd of August and the discovery of her body on the 1st of September? The pathologist states she had died between 4 and 7 days prior to her discovery. Had someone been keeping her alive for those few days? If so, who? Did Tammy get into a vehicle? Was she killed at the scene of the breakdown? Was she killed in a truck or another vehicle? Did anyone see her get into a vehicle while she was trying to repair her car? Is Robert Bullington correct when he says he saw Tammy get into a truck belonging to a male he knew as Jerry with Nebraska license plates at about 1 a.m. on the 24th of August? If Robert Bullington is correct, who is Jerry? What vehicle was Jerry driving? Could Jerry have been traced via CB radio? Did any of the other 26 drivers that stopped to help Tammy see her enter a vehicle? What was the reason Tammy's body was dumped over 500 miles away? This was a journey of about 7 hours. Was the suspect driving in that direction? What route would have been taken from the place Tammy was last seen to the discovery of her body? What type of person would be able to travel such distances with a kidnapped female in their vehicle? Why was she dumped just off the Interstate 44 near Secosa? The DNA possibilities must be high. Tammy had been sexually assaulted. Is there any sperm or hair for comparison? Any DNA on her clothing? The tape used to wrap the blanket, are there any fingerprints or DNA? The blanket has fibres, have any of these been recovered? Where is the murder weapon? The killer must have had blood on them. Did anyone see a person covered in blood? Do they recall seeing a person washing blood away from their hands? Does anyone remember washing blood-stained clothing? Where is Tammy's watch? It is extremely distinctive. Where is her 35mm camera? Where are her purse and wallet? Has anyone seen a St. Giles Soccer Club Greenville SC badge? If the underwear isn't Tammy's, who does it belong to? Does a shopkeeper remember selling a pink bra with the word love inscribed on it? Did the killer know the area where Tammy was found? Which company does the unidentified white truck with stripes belong to? Who was driving that truck? The driver is described as 35 to 40 years, just over 6 feet tall, with dark bushy hair. Were any of these involved? Jerry the trucker with Nebraska license plates, Lonnie Beardropped, Bruce Medanol. Someone knows who the killer is. Someone has that vital piece of information. Don't forget, go to www.armchairdetectiveswanted.com where you will find photos and further information about the case. Please visit our Facebook page, Armchair Detectives Wanted, where you will be able to discuss your theories and views with other members. Week 22 of our scenario. Smith, the local resident, is now re-interviewed, and he provides the following account. He says that he knew the female occupant from taking the kids to school. They began chatting and she explained how she was unhappy in her marriage. They began an affair and had been seeing each other for the last 6 months. He says on that evening, after her husband had left, he went into the house, but they soon began to argue and a glass and lamp was smashed by him. He left the address, dropping his key as he did. He returned about an hour later, climbing over the back wall to apologise. As he did so, the police arrived, he panicked and ran off. Would you A. charge him, B. release him? Thank you for listening to Armchair Detectives Wanted. You are one of the team. Remember, don't just listen, be involved. We really would appreciate you recommending our podcast to others. We look forward to you joining us next week for episode 23, Human Trafficking.